animals less healthy than you can't nourish you.
Are you surviving or are you thriving?
Are you too busy to live?
Do you have grain brain?
Fat was brain.
Fight for your life. Get your prescription for health today.
Is Mother Nature too good to be
true?
It's
not you, it's the food. It's a no-grainer.
Oh, that isn't happening to us.
It's already happening to you, woman. Join our army of Minas.
Keep the government off our farms.
Make it happen today.
Save the bacon.
Save the bacon.
It's time to drop some atomic mom bombs.
It's not me. It's you. Invest in your life.
Yay! Her name is Neethi.
Go save the bacon, mommy.
Hello, friends. It's Neethi the pharmacist, and I'm here today with one of my CSA members, Janae Williams.
Hi, everyone.
Yay, Janae's here. We are going to talk about your experience. I asked Janae before she came on the show today, what were the three most shocking truths about what she learned from me regarding this food system problem that we're having right now. Why don't you first tell the listeners how you discovered the CSA?
So I basically am a student of nutrition in regards to the fact that I have tested myself, I guess you can say, test foods that I eat, how it makes me feel all my life. And I think it's kind of second nature. I don't think a lot of it. My daughter will tell you that she'll choose a vegetable she's not used to choosing, and I will put an encyclopedia of whole foods in her lap, and she'll look it up and see what the health benefits are. So it's always like my scientific mind, an experiment. But really, I want to know what it is to be optimally healthy. And I've always had that desire to know what are the foods that I eat. You know, what are they going to do? What's the impact? Is it going to bring me down? Is it going to bring me up? So I'm kind of like a student of energy and nutrition and how that impacts it. So on my journey towards this, you came along and I think I watched you for 2 years. So I got to a place where my scientific project on myself was in a really good place. My body and my health had changed somewhat after kind of moving across that boundary of between 39 and 40 years old. And, so I had to kind of change up some things. So I really started looking into what I could do to, learn more about, changing the state of my health at that time. There were some challenges that I just, you know, didn't get. Started to learn a lot about what it was, the grain. I still had grain in my diet. We had sugar in our diet that was hidden that we didn't know about. Once we learned about those things, we got rid of those things and we were doing awesome. You know, we were great, pretty much grain free, but very, very well aware of all of the foods that we chose, everything, ingredients. We always looked at them. And I wasn't scrutinizing so much in the past in that way. I thought about good foods to eat, but I learned more as time went by, even in regards to what are clean foods, what's the organic foods that we should be definitely always ensuring that it's organic, what are some that don't necessarily need to be organic, you know, like all of these things I was learning, and really got to a good place, learned about farm to fork meats, and I just watched you, and I almost, a couple of years ago joined, but we had a meeting, you and I. It wasn't a real meeting. It was just like an encounter where I had introduced myself and we were talking for a bit. And I had mentioned that we were on our way to hope it's okay to say Whole Foods. Okay. I wasn't sure, you know, if it was copyright or I don't know. but we were on our way to Whole Foods and I was so proud, you know, because we were going to go pick up our ground beef, you know, what is 85/15 grass fed beef. And I mentioned something about that. We got on it and you said, that stuff isn't all grass-fed. And I just kind of looked like, it's what, not what?
I don't even remember that.
It made an impression on me. And so I said, what do you mean? And so we kind of had a talk about what it means to be grass-fed and grass-finished. After that moment, I went right to my car. I sat down. I talked to my daughter. I said, I just finished talking to someone that made me feel like Whole Foods was fast food. For that moment, I felt that way because that was an assault. You know, what they're doing was an assault on what I thought I was doing, which was cleaning it up. Making it better.
Right.
And
I do want to say that they label everything correctly. I mean, I just want to say that part of it. In terms of the way that, I mean, just for the people of Whole Foods or whatever, I don't want anyone to misunderstand what I said to you.
Right.
Because I'm not saying that they're liars. And they're not mislabeling things. I think that the consumer's understanding of what those labels mean is different than that. And I find a lot of people that think that Whole Foods are liars and cheaters, and I hear it all the time. And I want everyone to know that I don't believe that. I personally think that Whole Foods labels everything and is like, you know, disclaiming things full on. I do believe in the past they've made some mistakes. Let's call them mistakes because they have had things written on the walls of some of their buildings and some of their locations that might have said, you know, everything, and like if it's in here, it's healthy type of a statement. Mm-hmm. And I know that they did things to correct that and be very careful of what words they use. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm out here bashing Whole Foods because frankly, I believe that it is because of Whole Foods that we're able to even have GMO labeling at all because the government isn't going to require it, but Whole Foods mandated that all of their vendors label. And so I'm very, very happy that they did that because if they hadn't done it, I don't even know if there would be as much of an effort on any of the manufacturers labeling GMOs.
Right.
So I do want to say that.
Yeah.
But is everything in there perfectly what people expect it to be? It is the truth. I mean, everything that's in there, they label it with the truth. Now, whether you understand that label or not is completely different.
Right.
Which is what the show is about.
Absolutely.
This podcast is to clarify all of these truths. And so I don't ever want the podcast to have the reputation of being blamers. Because we're not here to blame anybody about anything. What we're here for is to clarify things so that there's a better understanding. I mean, you know, why is the food system so complicated right now? I think it's because you have a lot of money in chemistry project food and you have a lot of media promoting convenience and you have a lifestyle that a lot of people believe is okay to have. And they think that they're living a balanced lifestyle with all this convenience when the truth is that nothing's that convenient.
Right.
If it's legitimately real in terms of nature,
yeah.
Like that isn't how nature operates. So we're here to drop some inconvenient truths, reveal them maybe, so to speak. But we don't have to keep going down that road, but I don't want anybody to believe that we're here to find folks to blame. We want to clarify the truths and let everyone know what's happening so that everyone can make a decision about what it is that they want for themselves.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, you know, it was a feeling. So I felt like that. You didn't say that, But I felt like it would be, it was becoming a kind of a fast food. That was just in that moment.
Sure.
Because I'm thinking those choices that I'm making are sound.
Right.
But it's not that clear cut. And what I realized after we talked was there's a whole lot more to this. And it was exciting, but then very upsetting at the same time, because it shouldn't be so difficult to get to the truth about the food that you eat.
Amen.
Right?
It shouldn't. It drives me nuts. And I mean, unfortunately, I'm usually the person who's like dropping these truth bombs on people. And like you said, it's an assault, which is one of the other reasons I did the podcast. I don't want people to feel like I'm just out there personally attacking them if I'm revealing a truth. I mean, I can't, as a human being, I can't just be walking around and hear someone right in front of me say something and I don't tell them the truth about it if I know it. Right?
Right.
Like, what kind of person would I be if I didn't tell them? So anyway, I'm sorry that I assaulted you.
No, the assault was the reality. The assault was not anything to do with you. You were hope in actually getting to the truth. And I avoided it because I didn't want to know the truth.
Oh, wow.
At the time that I spoke with you and you said that, I had gone through years worth of trying to get it right. And I did. I shed 65 pounds from that. Even the clarity in my thought process, things were getting even better than they were prior. Energy wise,
yeah.
In my 20s, I'm 46, in my 20s, it was getting better.
Yeah.
But I saw in you another level that I couldn't seem to achieve on my own. But I wasn't ready. At the time when I talked to you, the assault was sort of like, I really just got this thought that it shouldn't be so difficult for people to get to the truth about the things that they're eating.
Yeah.
It should be more good, whole, living, God-made food available. You shouldn't have to hunt for that.
But food used to just be food.
Right.
It used to just be, okay, here's an apple. An apple's an apple. If you're going to convert it into a dish, then the only thing is, are you going to do a good job or not? And then, then the only criticism would be, hey, you didn't do a really good job, or
right.
You did a great job. And so people were cautious to say they would eat at someone's house or not. Because they'd be like, oh, she's not going to do a good job on those apples, but,
yeah.
And now it's not about that. It's right. Not about your ability to craft that raw goodness into something. Now that raw goodness isn't even what it was. It isn't even nature's bounty anymore. Now it's some type of chemistry project.
Right.
And I think that's what's, that's what's the assault is
exactly.
That they have violated our basic natural components, the ingredients, which is why I'm always telling everybody, like, read the label. Let me throw something else at you with that real quick. I wanted to focus with you the three most shocking truths that you told me. One was this grass-fed versus finished piece, which I want to get into that. There's also the animals being unable to mate that you had not really thought about that we'll talk about. And then the seafood problems with the cloning of seafood. I mean, frankenfish literally being sold on the market unlabeled. But did you know when you're reading the ingredients label that they don't have to list the processing of that item? Let's for example, talk about lettuce.
Okay.
You get organic lettuce. The package ingredients say organic lettuce. They don't talk about the process in which it has to be triple washed in chlorinated water. Now, yeah. Even though yeah. That chlorinated water may not be the mop bucket of Clorox water that I use to clean the floor with, which I don't even use in my house, but It's we don't use bleach in our house, but to put it on my food, I don't care how many parts per millionth it is in the water. I don't want that.
Right.
Which is the reason why we don't even drink tap water or use tap water. So, you know, I'm not trying to paralyze people about everything that's happening. I think we just need to be aware of it.
Absolutely.
And why isn't everyone standing up and saying something about it? Because I feel like if everyone knows that this is what the situation is, then consumers have the power just simply to not participate.
Consumers are still trusting in the powers that be that aren't taking care of them. It's not the responsibility anymore. The paradigm has shifted to something else. It's not, you know, and I think at one point it was. Mm-hmm. And so there is a fear. I mean, even for me, knowing that I had to take control of my choices to, I think, a greater level than many people have done, yet and still, there's more to it. And I think the deeper you go in the rabbit hole, there is a sort of an apprehension to go down there. But I can tell you that now that I'm down there, I am at a much better place. I feel like there's a lot more I could do for my body, for my family. You know, I'm glad I went there. Mm-hmm. It's not really good to kind of bury yourself in the sand. If there's more to know, then know it. I'm really amazed at the things that I'm learning. I've opened myself up to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you're a resource for me.
Do you feel like we've been able to help give you food freedom?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that is the point of this, by the way. Like, I want to be the catalyst to, give the farms, the regenerative small family farms, a platform and to reestablish that food system by giving the eaters, you know, food independence or food freedom and health independence, actually. Because if you have food freedom, that resolves this health crisis.
Right.
It resolves the... You know, I mean, the number one thing in the political, you know, commentary was, you know, the health system, or, you know, one of the largest obstacles that they felt like they were trying to tackle all the time was, you know, basically they keep talking about insurance, and I'm just talking about like reality, real time health, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you feel like it's giving you that freedom, because that is what we're trying to empower everyone.
Right.
With this information, not fear monger them.
Yeah. I feel empowered. And, you know, part of the reason why I was my own experiment is because I do have a scientifically sort of, gauged mind, and, you know, I have a science background. And so I filter everything through that. I analyze, you know, things. Mm-hmm. And I did that with my food. When I see my energy shift, then I make a change. You know, and then I find that food does that just fine.
Yeah.
And I don't mind not spending time in the doctor's office, you know, because I'm having problems. I mean, I like being able to have that energy. And so this is really empowering me. And, you know, I think that knowing what I know now, it does, like you say, the food freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I do come here, and I do come here with a trust that where I'm getting this food from is a good place. When we talk and you enlighten me about the process and even how you evaluate the farms, it sets me free from feeling so frustrated about whether or not this is really a good thing for me to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, I come here and I know that this is a good thing for me to eat. And yeah, there are times when we do go to Whole Foods, but I know something now. I know what's a good food to eat and what's not, even to another level. Hey, because I went to that butcher. I talked to everybody there. You know, they know me. It was like my kitchen. I went to him. I said, tell me something about how these cows are finished. And he told me, you know, it's not.
Yeah, they're not. They're lying to you.
They're not lying. You know, so he was honest and I was more knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we all need to get to.
Right.
In order to head in the right direction, we need to be more knowledgeable and being open to it. Those 2 years that I kind of stayed away, I'm like, now that I'm eating this good butter and this good meat and the yogurt that tastes so heavenly, I'm like, what is wrong with me? I should have done this 2 years ago.
Right. I know. You get this passion and you're just like, I tell everybody, I'm like, if you're going to let it go in your mouth and not like ignite some passion within you, You know, I have had people, you know what someone said to me? They said, Neethi, your reason for eating is different than mine. I'm, you know, like a CrossFitter, bodybuilder, whatever. And, you know, I'm just fueling myself for, you know, for lifting or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was just confused because I was like, well, why can't you find joy in that fuel?
Right.
Because the fuel I'm talking about giving you would let you lift better, bigger, stronger, but, and with less injury also, you know,
yeah.
But why do you think that it's not supposed to ignite passion? And isn't that why you're lifting anyway? Isn't that your passion? I don't care what your passion is. I don't care if your passion is to go lay on a hammock and stare at the sky or go, you know, lift a boulder or compete in the CrossFit games or, you know, go play the violin. It right. doesn't matter. You still have to fuel your body.
Yeah.
Regardless of any of that. And, you know, so when they said that to me, I was just confused. I thought, so you can't have joy while you're fueling your body to lift? What are you saying? Like, what does that even mean? I'm confused. Is it supposed to be a goo strip? Like while you're running, what do those runners do? The goo?
They do the goo. The bodybuilders, they just do the straight protein, which it seems like farm to fork meats would be great for that.
Right. I was like, the difference is that when you're getting our protein, then you're also getting more life-giving forces like the collagen, like mm-hmm. all the, you know, like what they do is interesting to me, right? Like they'll take their powdered protein, and then they have to have like literally an entire drawer full of more powdered pills and whatever. And so I'm like, okay, so now you'll take like really expensive chemistry project, like two drawerfuls of that crap, but you won't put that money into just some broth. Like, you know,
which has the power naturally rather than to have it.
I know. By the time you do all of that, and by the way, I'm so grossed out by it. Like, you're just taking these gazillion pills of something, and I could drink my soup while I'm watching you try to sort all that out. And, right. you know.
Just to know, if they only knew what mm-hmm. broth could do, if they only knew yeah. the properties of it, then that probably would change them. It would be interesting to have a bodybuilder side by side, someone that is doing the chemistry project and someone that has
straight up real food
decided right. to do real food and see what the differences would be.
So I've known some people that are very conscious about the real food. I could send some challenges out right now to some people that I won't announce on air, but I have a couple of folks in mind that I know do food, but not maybe 100,000%, but they would if, you know, if the stars were aligned perfectly. And maybe they had a chef they could afford to just like be preparing it for them because they're, you know, right. because of their lifestyle or the working out or whatever. But I think that just like all of us aren't perfect at making time to meditate or exercise, all of us aren't also perfect at making time to cook.
True.
And so it's just a matter of trying to get that balance in place. And I mean, let's be honest, we're not all perfect. I mean, we're trying to be perfect, but we're not perfect. Let's get back to these topics. You said grass-fed versus finished. Did you also know that even if you have a beef that is grass-fed and grass-finished, then, you know, they're not, most of them aren't being carried over 2 winters. So really, a perfect beef would be about 28 months old and would have been on grass for those 28 months. And preferably processed in the fall. So it had all the grass from the spring and the summer before the grass goes away in the fall.
Okay.
And what most, if it, basically you can tell by the pricing, the price points, you know, like if it's less than $8 a pound or $10 a pound, then it definitely was not raised for that long.
I see.
And if a farmer is selling it for less than that, they're not going to be farming long. Mm. So I've been accused of making farmers raise their prices when the truth is not that I'm trying to increase the cost of our food. It's just that I don't want them to quit. How long are you going to farm you know, not being paid.
I don't know anybody who works for free.
I don't know anybody who works for free. And they might do it for a minute, because we're at a moment right now where people are just becoming aware of what they should be eating. And had they known it long ago, then we might not have lost this food system. Right. But, you know, the food system was dismantled post-World War II. And we'll get into that in a different episode. But that's why we're trying to reestablish it. So if you're trying to reestablish an entire industry, basically, you know, the infrastructure has been gone. And so, you know, even if you have the most efficient farmers, you know, Joel Salatin is a very efficient farmer. And I think that whatever his price on beef is right now is the best, most efficient grass-fed beef price you'll find anywhere. It's a great baseline to use to know what is correct and what is not correct. And the only thing more costly than probably Joel Salatin's beef at Polyface would be Heritage beef.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can think of, is that it's a different Heritage breed that just requires more feed, or to be on feed a little bit longer or something. But because he is very efficient, he has done all the time and motion studies. So anyone who's pricing their beef along the lines of Joel Salatin, I mean, he's very, very efficient. He knows all his inputs. So the farmers should be striving to meet that price point by trying to make their operation more efficient. And other folks should be, you know, thinking about that. Eaters should be thinking about that. Now, you got to go to Joel's place to get his beef on his farm. So if you take Polyface beef and take it somewhere, now you require labor, distribution, whatever, 100 things. So you can go ahead and tack that price on. So you can either drive to his place in Virginia and hope you get some before he sells out, or you can find a farm that's closer to you that may not be as efficient as his farm, but is doing the same things as his farm, who's working to try to become that efficient to increase their sales, to get the volume to match his sales so that they can reduce their price or something of that nature. At some moment, you have to think about all of those things. Like, how much does it cost you to drive to his place in Virginia? Hmm. Are you on the West Coast? I don't know. You know, you need to just think about all these things. But another thing is that people can say that it's grass-fed, grass-finished, but in the winter, they may have fed them some grain. Got a lot of questions to ask. So you want to know, did they supplement grain ever? In the winter, what did they do to keep the animals healthy in the winter? And then listen to the farmer. Hear what he has to say, and then use your gut to know if that's something that you want or not. It's very simple, but you can't ask somebody that in a grocery store.
Right.
So I say get out of the grocery store personally. Those are, you know, those are the other things to consider. Animals being unable to mate. Currently, I was telling you that all the chickens that are like in restaurants and in grocery stores are Cornish cross. Well, the Cornish cross is physically unable to do the deed. Tell us your thoughts on that. As a scientific mind.
Okay, so when we first started to talk about that, the first thing that hit me was this revelation of how an animal has this instinct, and the instinct is to carry itself on, to carry, you know, carry itself, to proliferate, carry itself forward. These animals are telling us something by not having the ability, or it not occurring to them at all, to mate. That's like saying, please do not move forward with this experiment. It's not healthy. It's not good. That hit me like a ton of bricks when we talked.
I know. Like, aren't you like wondering, are they going to fight for their life?
It's like they're trying to end that. They're trying to end this line.
So they don't forage. That's the other thing about those birds. If they don't forage like that very well, because they're not even mating. I mean, let's be clear, everyone. Our entire purpose on this planet is to procreate. That's it.
Yeah.
Every single thing else that we do, this podcast or whatever we're doing in this world, is out of sheer boredom. I mean, right? We're just entertaining ourselves while we're here. And we have all this technology and all this stuff, and awesome. I mean, who's knocking it? Not me. But at the same time, we have to realize that there are certain basic instincts and natural behaviors that must be respected.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, you know, I tell everybody, I'm like, if you don't have a sex drive, you're broken.
Something's wrong. Because we all have a drive to create.
Right. You're broken.
And to move forward. I think also about, you know, you had mentioned some of these animals don't see sunlight, don't touch soil.
Not some. I want to be very, very clear about this. If it is organic or non-GMO or whatever, and it is in a restaurant or a grocery store, it is absolutely coming from a house. And the reason it is coming from a house is because they're raising 20,000, 40,000 birds at a time. I mean, think about it. You have a society that is programmed to believe that it's supposed to have a chicken breast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that is unrealistic. It's insanity, actually. If you needed to go outside, kill a chicken every day, first of all, I don't know anybody who's going to do that every day. Secondly, I don't know anybody who's going to just even chop an onion, never mind actually do that. Defeather it, blah, 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 whatever, whatever. Right. When you're eating something, particularly animals, you know, and I am a Mediterranean, let me go ahead and just say that. So I have to, when I'm eating any meat, I'm always thinking to myself, like, what would I have to do to get this on my plate if this was Little House on the Prairie times? And then I know how much meat to eat.
Right.
Okay. So people are saying, you know, generically, eat less meat. I think that's crazy. What does that mean? That's relative. You know, yeah. Maybe I eat a whole steer a day. You don't know what I do. So what I want people to do is think about, if you were living in Little House on the Prairie time and you had your livestock outside and you processed it, means you killed it, whatever, butchered it. Now, you know, how much of that are you going to eat? What are you going to do with the rest of it? Are you going to throw some away? I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what you can afford to do. Okay. Me, I'm not wasting anything. Okay. And if I had to butcher it, whatever, whatever, then I want to know, like, okay. And so this is actually what we did, Janae. We thought to ourselves, how much meat is on a steer? And in fact, when we first started making our lifestyle changes, then we bought an entire steer just to see, like, what does the steer look like? It's a lot of meat. A lot of meat. That was enough beef to last us an entire year.
Wow.
So now we got that beef and we just looked to see how long it actually lasted. It actually lasted us. I mean, we were still eating bits and pieces of that probably after 18 months.
That's incredible.
The thing about it was that we actually eat less meat. Not because we were like, oh, we're going to be more vegetarian or something. No. First of all, eating nutrient-dense meat satiates you so quickly, you can't eat that much. Chicken, I was like, dude, if I have to eat chicken, seriously, like based on how much I would consume one entire bird if it was in my backyard. So we might have a breast once a week. We might have leg quarters, or we might have a back. But we don't eat chicken more than once a week, because I'm going to keep some of it for the next week and some of it for the last week. Or maybe I'm going to save the backs and use them when it's winter, when I just want to have a bunch of soup and stew. and I'll eat the other parts during the grilling season. And so I might end up with a whole bunch of, like right now, I have a bunch of backs in my freezer. And at the moment, honestly, it's kind of sad for me because it's never really gotten cold this season.
Right.
But otherwise, those are that's how I choose to consume an entire chicken. And my family can't eat more than a chicken breast at a time for the whole family. We make sure everybody has plenty, and we make sure we ask the kids to I mean, they know they can have bottomless as much as they want. If they need me to go make something else, I will do it.
Yeah.
They know that. But I know they can't finish more than that.
That's one thing that I've noticed since I've started with the CSA is that my 13-year-old daughter, she pushes away from the table sooner than she did before.
Mm-hmm.
So there is definitely a point of satisfaction that I think, is, you know, we both have established, and I'm a meatitarian also. I really am. I do appreciate good meat. And mm-hmm. I think that comes from having been raw, having been a little of everything, over time. And, you know, when it comes to vegetarianism and feeling like I was lacking, like I always had that feeling like something was missing. That I had to listen to my body. And when I added the meat back in moderation, it felt like that missing piece that we had been looking for at that point was recovered.
So you actually haven't even been in the membership that long, but you had already been working on removing grains and sugar. You know, a lot of people just know that people think that grains and sugar are bad, but I don't think they quite understand what the big deal is. And so I want to just quickly say that, you know, the reason that grains are such a problem today is that they're not being harvested naturally. I mean, yes, the seeds have also, you know, been hybridized and they have been adulterated, you know, but that's not really what I'm always telling everybody the big deal is. I mean, yes, they don't have as much nutrition as, you know, they did as ancient seeds might have. But the bigger thing that no one is realizing is that harvesting grain requires a lot of time. It, you know, you're supposed to harvest grains, allow them to dry. And then people would have always fermented the grain. And the grain would have been fermented in the fields even before they came in, had they been harvested correctly. So what they do now is they're desiccating. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, I mean, like literally dousing chemicals on grain to dry it, to harvest it. They're desiccating it with Roundup. So what I'm saying is that you take wheat, for example, spray it with Roundup to dry it, to harvest it. Because look, what are your options? Here are the options. You're going to what? Pay labor to go collect all this, bring it in, soak it, sprout it, dehydrate it in a machine. I mean, that's laborious and expensive. And your flour would not be 58 cents a pound or whatever it is that people buy it for, you know, or you would leave it in a field to let it ferment in the field naturally with the dew of the, you know, morning and the sun during the day. It gets wet naturally out in the field. It dries. It gets wet. It dries. It goes through this process every day for an entire season. Mm-hmm. So now it's been pre-digested, right? It's been fermented in the field before it even was brought inside, before you thrashed it or did whatever. And even if you didn't soak it, it was already pre-digested in the field. So the access to the nutrition in that grain at that time would have been different, right?
True.
But if you're going to spray it with a chemical and a poison, and then you're going to bring it in and do anything with it, at that point, it's garbage. Like to me, that's garbage.
Yeah.
And if you eat it, then all it's doing is leaching minerals out of your bones. It makes you hungry faster. It isn't satiating you, on top of which it behaves like crack It makes you hungrier. It's addictive because it's a poison. It's not a food. So when I call wheat crack, I mean, that's exactly what I mean that it is. It is a drug that you can't say no to, that people are addicted to, that they can't stop eating. Why are you eating something that you can't say no to? That's crazy, right?
It is.
I mean, like, I love strawberries. They come in and out of season so fast, I get so sad. I mean, my heart breaks when the strawberries are gone. But I don't have withdrawal symptoms.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And when you let go of grains, as anyone else would have, didn't you experience some detoxifying withdrawal?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I had headaches. What about you?
I did. And yeah, it was a process going through that.
I say, hey, I was a weedaholic. Why am I not on it now? Is it because I just wanted to fight with everybody, Janae? Or did we just wake up? I mean, did you change your lifestyle because you just wanted to fight with everybody to prove that you're better than they are?
Absolutely not.
I mean, is that what you're at?
I wanted health. I wanted to feel good, you know. I want a better quality of life. That was it, you know. I mean, all of this is kind of that example of what the assault is. All of this is about that assault, you know.
Right.
You don't expect those chemicals and that chemistry project, you know, just like I don't expect for, if they say wild caught with seafood, you know, I don't expect for that to be anything less than wild in the ocean, wild caught, you know, just
right.
to hear that there was more to it than just that was horrifying to me.
I know, like salmon, people are cloning it. I mean, you know, I just find it such a criminal act that you can make frankenfish, okay, and sell it for profit without a label. If you know you're eating frankenfish for $3 a pound, whatever.
Right.
Are you going to choose that? I don't know. I mean, maybe you're going to choose the $3 cloned fish. Maybe you're not. If they're so proud of what they're doing, why aren't they labeling it?
Yeah.
That's the problem that I'm having is this, you know, so we're talking about food with integrity. And I don't think that no one is understanding that. Like people say to me, what's the difference between your turkey and our turkey? What's the difference between the turkey I can just go buy at the store and your turkey? You know, and I'm like, okay, so it's not about me making a PETA movement statement like, you know, save the turkeys or don't eat turkey or I mean, sure, I don't want you to abuse the turkey. Why would you abuse anything you want to eat anyway? Like if you're raising it for, you know, if you're using correct husbandry anyway, then you're respecting everything and managing it in a balance. The problem is that you can't industrialize life.
Right.
And when you try to industrialize it, you end up with this cloned salmon. And they even have wild caught fish that are raised in ocean CAFOs, meaning like another confined animal feeding operation that's happening in the ocean. I mean, I don't know how many of the listeners out there know that salmon only runs once a year. Once. So then how can there be salmon literally everywhere all the time? Unless you're farm raising it. And most of the salmon in Whole Foods or grocery stores are farm raised and they say it. It's written on there for you to see. It's not
right.
a lie.
Absolutely.
It's not a trick. You just have to decide if that's okay with you. Just be aware that if it's being farm raised, then it's being grain fed.
Right.
And fish is a carnivore. Like big fish eat little fish, basically. That's just how it works. They don't eat bread. They don't eat bread. And so, and then the grain that they're being fed is a GM grain. It's not like, you know, the highest quality organic grain. And even if it is an organic grain, the process of desiccating and harvesting it is not on the ingredient label. So it can be listed as organic grain because that is the ingredient they don't have to list the process as an ingredient.
Right. So there's a lot more to it than we know.
Right. So that's the difference, is the process versus the ingredient. You have to be aware of how things are being processed, like the organic lettuce that's being washed, triple washed in bleach water, but that's a process. Mm-hmm. The process doesn't have to be in the conversation.
Right.
And it doesn't have anything to do with the labeling, because the labeling is all about the ingredient. So it was a high quality seed that was probably, you know, GMO free lettuce seed, you know, that was never raised with any pesticides or herbicides and whatever the definition is of organic. But then the harvesting and packaging of it, which is the process, doesn't have to be part of the conversation.
Right.
And those are those truths that I think people are unaware of and that are the most disappointing, is that just when you think that you're doing the right thing, or you're doing the best that you can, or whatever. And I think that's what it is a lot of folks are just like, oh my God, we can't even get away from this. So just forget it. Whatever. We're just all going to die. Let's just eat it anyway. It doesn't matter. You know, I hope that by listening to the podcast, everyone is able to realize that you can control what you put in your mouth and you can make better choices. And the farmers are on the ready. I mean, they are waiting to rise to the occasion to nourish you if you give them the opportunity, but they are not going to do it for 58 cents a pound or whatever the nonsense is that you see in the store. You need to know what you're paying for, and you need to understand the cost of that. And I mean, you should think about, you know, like, would you raise it? People tell me all the time, well, I can just do my own chickens. I'm like, well, then do them and find out how expensive it is, because it's more expensive for you to do a small batch for yourself and laborious, and the fact that you can't travel and you can't go anywhere. Maybe it's fine. Maybe it's worth it. It's just like homeschooling.
Right.
It's not cheaper than paying for private school. You know?
Yeah.
Do the math.
Right. You know, I'm hoping that it's just a for now thing. I kind of feel like being a part of the CSA is my step towards making this, being a part of that voice that has this demand rising for better food supply.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And the more people that hear that, I'm not shy to say it. I'll say it. I don't care what anyone thinks. You know, I will pay more for what I eat because I care about life and I want to be here.
Well, it'll save you money on the pharmaceuticals.
Absolutely. And they are expensive. I know about those. They're expensive.
Right.
Extremely expensive. So this is the way to go. If we can get the demand greater, then
and we are. Do you know that since I started the CSA, in 2009. And it's 2017. And when we first started, and even 3 to 5 years in, we couldn't get clean feed to raise all the animals, soy-free and GMO-free.
Wow.
In fact, at that time, GMOs weren't even part of the conversation. They became part of the conversation around 2010. And then about the GMOs in the animal feed, most people were still never addressing that. I don't believe that it's still being addressed correctly all the time. And most large operations that are GMO-free are definitely not soy-free, and they are not addressing that. And they're not talking about that part at all. And the problem isn't that it's whole soy. If it was whole soy or fermented soy or soy done correctly, it's the fact that it is garbage soy. It is the hull or a part of the soy after they've made like soybean oil or something of that nature. So, you know, like, we don't feed our animals garbage. There's a difference between feeding them garbage and feeding them the whole plant. So first of all, it needs to not be a genetically modified plant. It needs to never be sprayed. So feeding animals soy wouldn't be such a problem if it was whole and it was roasted and it was processed correctly, because then it would be more fermented. And fermented soy can be medicinal.
Okay.
The problem is that people are not managing those grains correctly. And the majority of the soy in America today is genetically modified. So on that note, we will wrap it up. I wanted to thank you so much for coming on and being brave, because people are just unwilling to talk about food. And I realize that it's very, very intimate, and I appreciate so much you sharing the story and my violation. Even if it was unintentional.
It was good.
it's really amazing for me to hear that and see that it made you think. I do find a lot of times that I'll say something to somebody and they will be turned away or whatever, or walk away from me. But interestingly, I'll see them a couple years later or 3 years later, one guy 5 years later, and he was like, "I can't unhear you." And I'm like,
when we're ready.
So anyway, I appreciate everything. I really do appreciate your time. And I want you to know that everything that you do matters. I mean, because like I said, we didn't get clean feed for a long time. And now, because of the members in the CSA, we actually have had demand, obviously. All the farmers have been competing for the feed because of what my CSA is doing. Other people are talking to their other farmers saying, "Hey, how come she's got that and you don't have it?" You know? And so there's a demand for the feed. And now in North Carolina, we have clean feed available.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So I don't want you to think that anything that you're doing is small. It's very big. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ruthie. I appreciate you.
Leave an honest review about the show on iTunes and like and share our Facebook page. You can also sign up for our newsletter. And if you like the education that we're bringing to you each week, can you please help support our 501c3 mission to reestablish the regenerative organic small family farm food system by making it happen today with a tax-deductible cash donation? You can register and make a donation at www.farm2forkmeatriot.org. Again, that's www.farmtoforkmeatriot.org. And click on the donate button. I'm Neethi, signing off. Remember, let your farmer fill your prescription. Reboot, restore, and rejoice.